You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, the Binge Aftertaste.
Animatrix, released June 3rd, 2003, directed by Peter Chung, Andy Jones, and a whole bunch of guys whose names I'm going to really fuck up, so I'm not even going to attempt. I'm Garrett. I'm once again sitting here with Jack and Alex. And yes, it is finally the second part of our Matrix retrospective, and at this rate, we'll be done by Christmas if we're lucky.
Oh boy.
What's up, boys?
What's going on?
Hey, man.
Not much. You guys all set to talk some anime? This will be a first for the Aftertaste. We're talking a little anime today.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. This is some good shit, man. I'm pretty excited for this. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Before we get into the actual Animatrix, what's your guys' background with anime? Were you guys fans of it growing up? Have you guys watched it lately? Like, how do you guys feel about anime?
I'm not a huge fan of it. Just because it's not in my wheelhouse. I didn't really grow up with it, but I've seen a few of the important ones like Akira and Ghost in the Shell, and I dug those. Mm-hmm. It's just not something I go to right away, but I appreciate the artwork for sure.
Jack?
Yeah, I mean, when I was really young, I would dip into a little bit of Dragon Ball Z, stuff like that. I never enough to follow the story. I always got annoyed by it because it felt like it took 8 episodes for a guy to throw a punch. It was just a really weird, I don't know, weird pace and weird story, but The Matrix got me into a lot of anime for a little while. So, like Moreno was saying, your Akira, your Ghost in the Shell, Ninja Scroll,
yep,
all that kind of stuff. I got into quite a bit of that stuff right around this time in anticipation of the sequels. So, little bit of exposure. Not a whole lot. I mean, I've also, I think when Batman Begins was coming out on DVD, I want to say, they released this similar thing to the Animatrix. It was called Batman Gotham Knight, which was like six shorts, same style as this, all different directors and writers and stuff. All different Batman stories, probably of lesser quality than this, I would say, but still same type of thing.
As far as me, I, like Alex, we've spoken about this many times. I worked at a video store back in the mid-90s, and we had a store devoted to anime, and there was one weekend where, or actually probably a month, where I just delved into Ghost in the Shell and all of those. Like, they were all just sitting on the shelf. And there was also a very important show that was on around this time, before Jack's time, a little show called Liquid Television, which I used to watch a lot. A guy we're going to talk about today, Peter Chung, he was actually a huge part of that.
Yeah, he was Ian Flux guy, wasn't he?
Yep, nice. Ian Flux, yep.
Oh,
and
was,
he did the final story in this. It's an interesting world, but like you guys said, the pace of it is way different than anything we see in this country, and all the good things and all the bad things about anime are definitely on display in the Animatrix. Mm-hmm. You know, as we get into each individual story, we'll talk about it all, but it's just a different form of storytelling and something I like, because there's always something to look at, and so that's a great sensation. Now, Matrix was out 4 years before. We were highly anticipating these sequels, obviously. Mm-hmm. This was something that was different for entertainment. There was extra EU out there, you know, when around the time this was being released, a video game called Enter the Matrix was released.
Yes.
And that was a game I played hours and hours of.
And I completely forgot about it until I started watching this, and I was like, I think this is kind of like tied into the video game. I was like, holy fuck, there was a video game, and then I looked it up, and sure enough, there it is.
Yeah, I was hoping we would touch on this, because the Enter the Matrix game, like that whole, I can't remember her fucking name now, but Jada Pinkett Smith's character and her...
Niobe,
and what was the sidekick's name?
Ghost.
Niobe and Ghost, yeah. So I remember the Enter the Matrix game, it had like pieces of the movie that they had cut out and just made for the game, so the story sort of like weaved in between Reloaded, probably more Reloaded than Revolutions.
Yeah, but, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. But my like prevailing memory of that game is just like putting all the cheat codes in on PS1 or PS2 so that you could play as Neo. Because like that was, that was the big weird fucking thing about it, was like, it's a Matrix game and you get Matrix powers, but like you can't play as Neo. Like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's pretty, pretty good shit.
I love that game. Mm-hmm. I played it for hours. And in fact, on the Blu-ray set, they actually have all the cutscenes of that game on it. And I'll be watching that in preparation for next week's podcast.
It was kind of weird that, as far as that game goes, using the bullet time was like so shitty.
Yeah.
You know, Max Payne just did it so much better at that point.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. I remember being so disappointed in that. Like, this kind of fucking sucks. And it was such a huge Matrix mark by that point.
Yeah. I mean, not to go off on a tangent, but it's so fucking rare to have a video game that ties into a movie that's actually good. I mean, even when the game's good, it doesn't necessarily. Either the movie's shitty and the game's good, or vice versa, or like they're both kind of muddled, but they don't have nothing to do with one another. It's a weird trend. I don't really know why, but
yeah. And the video game, you know, a lot of times the directors of the movies, they'll hand off the video game. Guillermo del Toro has been known to do this. Mm. He'll hand video game developers the storylines and say, okay, go to work. You know, everything goes approved by him. But in this case, the brothers, at this time, they actually directed all the scenes in the video game. It was really, really weird, like how much these guys delved into their own world. Like, they handed it off to these Animatrix guys. You know, a lot of these guys, they met at conventions and things, and they put them in here. But the video game, they did all the cutscenes themselves.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Very unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
Then and probably now. I don't remember the last time a video game, or then. Since then, I don't know if any video game actually tied into a movie like this, but it was something that was, if you wanted to get into the world, you could, but it wasn't a necessity to get to get the gist of what's going on. And in this Animatrix, there are, I was wondering when I was watching this, because I hadn't seen this in, it's been at least a decade.
Yeah, for sure, me too.
I was wondering, like, are there characters that are going to tie in? And sure enough, there is at least one I can think of, and of course, we'll have appearances from Neo and Trinity and... But there's one character that we, we're definitely going to talk about. It's called the Kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the sequels as well. All right, so we're going to delve into this. We're going to go one story at a time. And at the very end, we're going to give one final rating for the entire thing, the way we feel about the entire set of stories, eight stories. So what do you guys say we get into it right now?
Sweet.
Okay, so The Flight of Osiris is the first one. This short, it played in front of the Final Fantasy film I saw in the movies just for the simple sake of seeing this short. Mm-hmm. You guys remember the Final Fantasy movie?
No. I remember it. I never saw it, though.
Oh, it was an event movie for me. I was so looking forward to it. You see the animation. It looked marvelous. It looked insanely good. And then you go see it. It's like, wow, this kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But this short, this Flight of Osiris, it played in front of the Final Fantasy film. It opens in a dojo, similar to the Neo and Morpheus fight. But this time, it's a girl and a guy we have never seen with swords that cut each other's clothes off. A very weird striptease of a segment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a go little ahead. Strange, but I mean, it's kind of like you said, anime is very much it's a cultural thing for the Japanese, and they have a lot of weird trends and weird perspectives on like what's considered proper in like a public setting. I mean, I actually, now that I think about it, it was the Tim Ferriss podcast with Darren Aronofsky. He was talking about how weird it was. Ferris was being in Japan and being on like a metro and people just like openly reading a manga with like graphic pornography in it, but just nobody casts an eye.
Yeah, exactly.
Being super really weird. Yeah, so like there's a lot of like quirky shit in these shorts that, you know, is kind of strange, but swords that slice off clothing aren't exactly the worst it can get. So let's, you know, be thankful that no tentacles showed up. So
yeah.
Well, it's just different. You know, it's a different thing. Like, we see The Matrix. We've seen Neo and Morpheus fight for, you know, 5-6 minutes or whatever. And these two, they have swords and they're cutting clothes off. It's with one girl being blindfolded. It's a different take on the material.
Sure. It's a little weird. Yeah.
And also the Wachowskis, too. You know, like, they like to dance that mm-hmm. violence and sexiness line.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The animation here, we're going to talk about animation a lot in this podcast, but the animation in this particular short, it's that creepy type of animation like we saw back in Beowulf and Polar Express, mm-hmm. like around that time. Mm-hmm. Like they tried so hard to get realism down, but I think like Pixar played it right, where they pretty much animated like objects. Mm-hmm. You know, we had toys that they were animating and bugs and these things. They hadn't tried animating people, and there's a reason for that. Around 2003, they still hadn't gotten it quite right. There are strands of hair that are fine, but it's kind of a creepy set of animation, I would say.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in this era that looks weird, and I think it's just a matter of like not being able to figure out what the balance between Gollum and, you know, everything that came before him was. And mm-hmm. yeah, it doesn't really hold up. I mean, I think this short in general is kind of meant to be like a technical marvel for the time. Mm-hmm. But because of that, it's very dated to me.
There's a chanting type score, and the way these two are looking at each other, it kind of feels like we're setting up, you know, them getting naked here in a few minutes, even if they are just swiping swords at each other. You know, it's like you guys were saying, it's just a weird violence, sexuality play that the Wachowskis have done their entire careers, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the alarm sounds, and we see that Sentinels are attacking their ship. I remember watching this segment at the time and thinking, are we going to see this crew in the sequels? But very little, you know, very, very cool little sequence happens as the Sentinels are attacking and the crew is fighting them off with turrets. They see the army gathering, and I like that we get a first glance at something we would, in fact, see in the sequels, which is the drilling tool.
Yes.
That was really cool.
That was
really
cool. Yeah.
I've forgotten about that.
Yeah, it totally ties into the to Reloaded, too.
Yes, positively. And Revolutions, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They say that they need to warn Zion, and the girl says that she will go in and warn them, and she reveals that she peaked during the fight, which I thought was funny when she said that.
Classic Wachowski dialogue.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. I like this couple a lot, though, and I'm stunned at how much I'm behind them accomplishing their mission, even though I barely know them. Plugs into the Matrix, and it really becomes like a race against time. Like Neo experienced in the first film, she tries calling him after she accomplishes her mission, yet the Sentinels get there first, and the segment ends with her body and phone lifelessly dropping to the ground. Interesting little tidbit, guys. This segment actually does it plays into Matrix Reloaded as well, because this letter that she sends is what Niobe gives to the crew at the beginning of that film.
Oh, right. Shit.
And overall, I'm kind of I like this segment. I think it's action-packed. It's just it left me just a little bit cold.
like I said, I don't think that narratively there's not much here. Like, it's a very simple, straightforward, get the information to this place and then sign out, basically. So it serves a purpose. But like I said, I think this one, I think all these shorts, even the ones that I don't like as much, all kind of serve a very specific purpose. I just think that when you think about the Matrix just as like a franchise or an entity, right? Like, it's good writing, it's awesome action, but it's also like a technical step forward. And I feel like this satisfies that sort of technical aspect for 2003. This was them putting it all on the table and saying, look, this is what we can do in animation now. Fucking love me, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a very, you know, there are some good things about it, but it's a very dated short to me. It just doesn't hold up as well as some of the others do.
I mean, I do like it. I think it's the most directly connected to the series. So I'm a fan of it in that. But yeah, I can see what you guys are saying about it.
Our next segment is the Second Renaissance, and we're going to cover both parts. This first segment, this segment is basically one huge data dump, right, guys? Mm-hmm. Like, we're put in the Matrix, and we're told that we're about to go into a historical file number 12-1, which I didn't look at IMDb or anything to see if that means anything. Knowing the Wachowskis, it probably does. Probably. I like this segment a lot, though, as it gives us a complete glimpse at how the Matrix came to being. Basically, everything Morpheus described to Neo was happening right before our eyes, right? Mm-hmm. I really enjoy this segment a lot. I know people who don't. I know people who say that it mirrors a lot of what happened in our history. Before I get into the details of it, though, I'm going to probably ask this for every segment, but how do you guys feel about the animation in this? Does it hold up for you, or can you watch it and not get eyesores? You guys like this?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. It's not distracting at all. I'm into it.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I think that this one is more stylized, you know, so you can kind of go with it.
Yeah, stylized to make up for, you know, its huge data dump, basically. Mm-hmm. It gets weird when it's said that the machines do their best to do humans' bidding, and a narrative picture of slavery is established, which, again, here we go. It's the historical stuff. Do you guys think this is in bad taste, or are you guys seeing, like, these machines suffer and feeling for them? I kind of do. I feel for these machines, you know, especially, who is it? Bigger, that one that they show for like a split second. Mm-hmm. How do you guys feel about how this is coming off? Is it bad taste or?
No, for me, it's not bad taste. I can see how it could be construed as such, but it works for me. I see what they're trying to, you know, draw parallels, and maybe that's a little unfair and a little insensitive, but it doesn't really bother me all that much.
Yeah, same here. I don't really see it as insensitive or even getting close to that. I mean, I think it's more trying to draw a line between history repeating itself. And I think that most people, when they see something like that, they're going to know right away, oh, slavery, okay, I see what they're doing here. So I think it's right in the wheelhouse. Makes sense.
Yeah, and I also think, like, the Wachowskis, you know, are definitely could be considered pretty heavy-handed as far as they're, like, like the religious parallels that they have, the historical parallels that they always exhibit. So, but still, I'm a fan of them, and it still works for me. Yeah,
absolutely.
It works for me, too, even with, like, the Million Machine March, which...
It was a little much.
Yeah, exactly. like they put in that first film, they push it and push it and push it, and we see it a little bit in these, and we're going to definitely see it starting next week, where they just push it too far.
Yeah.
You know, and the Million Machine March was pushing it too far. It's like, all right, guys, just...
Like you said, we'll get to it next week. Yeah, I think they just leaned on drawing those parallels too much instead of just telling like a really great story.
I do feel this segment is a powerful counterpart to the story that Morpheus outlined in that first film, though. Like, you could definitely watch that first film and then watch these segments and get that picture of exactly what he was saying. Mm-hmm. I love that, you know, the machines created their own nation. It's christened 01. And this makes mankind jealous, therefore escalating the tension. Like, all this stuff is working for me, man. I hadn't seen this in so long, and I'd completely forgotten that it was this exact story. And I'm really, really digging this segment. Both of these I'm really into a lot.
Yeah.
One thing I also really like about this one, and it's going to hold true for a lot of these others too, is the fact that I think it would have been easy to make every one of these segments somehow directly tie into Neo and Morpheus and Trinity. But the fact that they sort of cast a wide net and they go into the universe from like several different angles, I think is a really kind of cool idea. And I think it mostly works.
Man decides to seek destruction of the sky as a means to end the resistance. And we actually see questions I had about that first film's dialogue answered. We see the planes fly and get to see the sun get blocked out. You know, I asked last podcast, I'm like, so how did they black out that sky? And here we see
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that was cool.
And, you know, unlike some people having problems with the prequels and Star Wars and stuff, like, we're seeing it, and I'm actually satisfied seeing what's being developed here. Mm-hmm. So the violence between the sectors escalates, and the machines destroy the human race, and they learn that the biological energy from humans can be used as their new energy source. Again, stuff that we see in that film. And we see an individual case of a human child playing in snow and then get picked up as a brand new power source, which ends the piece. Powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Powerful stuff. Seeing this kid get picked up really got to me. And it's fucking animation.
Yeah.
The one piece that always gets me watching this, now I can't remember if it's part one or part two, but the moment where the woman is like being beaten by three or four people, and she's like screaming, and she's like, "No, I'm real. Mm-hmm. And like they rip her yes. clothes off, and then they hit her in the face, and like half her face is robot, and she's got this like fucking blood curdling robot scream. It's just like it's pretty fucking brutal for a cartoon.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very effective. Very effective. Anime has been known to push those boundaries, and it definitely does it here. But like Alex just said, it's effectively done.
Yeah.
Just powerful stuff.
Yep.
So we then move on to the next story called simply The Kid's Story, and this title character is one we will indeed see in the sequels. So this starts off with a child having dreams of falling and then waking up to ask chat rooms why his dreams feel so real. I asked about the last segment being kind of tasteless. I think this dream of this kid falling and basically like dreaming of committing suicide is kind of tasteless.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially given like the fallout that happened with the Columbine and things with the first Matrix. I think this is.
Yeah, I guess that's
I think
true.
This is kind of.
Yeah, I didn't think about
that. I think this is kind of poor taste. I don't know. A fantasy of a kid killing himself is, I don't know, maybe it's just because of my old age or something, but it kind of got.
Yeah, it's funny because you're making me think now. So like, you know, sometimes it just like when the time in which something is released is either like really great or really shitty for something. Like I think we've seen a lot of examples of that recently, like Jurassic World. Obviously, that was a success of just amazing timing, because I like that never occurred to me as being close to any of that stuff that was going on, it maybe having a negative effect at the time. It's interesting.
I find this story both endearing and sad, because on one hand, you know, we're seeing this kid feel isolation that a lot of us feel at this age, but it's sadly not really followed upon in the story, I should say. In the piece itself, it kind of leaves me kind of empty, you know.
It's a little simplistic.
Very simplistic. In fact, it's so simplistic that it kind of plays out like Neo's story in that first film, like in the beginning of it.
Right.
You know, the kid's phone rings even when he turns it off, and the whole rest of the story, like it's almost the beginning of that first film, told from a teenager's perspective. Right. You know, he's skateboarding away from the agents, running away from authority figures, and ends up falling from a building, much like his dream.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Neo, where, you know, he fell out of a building and he just bounced off the cement pretty much in that first film. Like this kid, he falls off he dies in the Matrix, doesn't he?
No.
I'm trying to think.
Oh, yeah, he dies in the Matrix, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's called imbalanced as we cut to his tombstone, yet Trinity and Neo wake him up in the Matrix.
Yeah,
so he died.
Pretty depressed.
There we go. Yeah, very much
but, you know, the one thing that they did say about kid waking up in the real world is that he did it himself. He was the only person, which is rare, to wake himself up. Like, Neo didn't even do that.
So is he the one, then?
I don't know.
Maybe you're the fucking
they call
rat.
Like self. Maybe you're the rat. That kid died from jumping off a building. So don't you be calling him a rat. I think they call it, like, self-substantiative? Some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that he woke up through his own volition instead of, like, getting that help from Neo or whoever the fuck he was able to, he chalks it up to Neo being to giving him the powers to do it, but he had the powers to begin with.
Yeah,
the whole time.
Yeah.
It's on the tip of my tongue. It's like self-substantiation.
That's what it is. Yeah,
yeah. I have very complex feelings on like the Matrix and then the Animatrix and the sequels. So like, I don't even know how to approach the question of is he the one. I don't think that's the slant here. I think it's just that they're trying to show that people from different walks of life can, you know, escape this prison. And I don't know exactly if it goes further than that. You know, I don't know that they even thought of it much further in advance than that. You know, I think as an interesting little one-off, you know, that's just what it is, really.
Yeah, I think we're going to be revisiting that idea when we get to Reloaded and Revolutions. Yeah. That, you know, the whole concept of the One and, you know, what it means in this instance of the Matrix is, I don't even think they knew. They're just kind of like spitballing. Yeah.
The next story is called Program, and it opens in the middle of a seeming war of some type of simulation with the big-haired badass female right in the middle of it. Yeah. This is almost like training in the Matrix centuries before the dojo Neo and Morpheus train on in the first film.
Right.
You know, a guy named Duo decides to go back to the Matrix to help Zion survive, but he also decides that he does not care about the truth anymore, and he just wants to escape. How are you guys feeling about this segment here? It's different. You know, we have different characters. We have this almost looking like heavy metal characters, you know, from that animated heavy metal movie from the 80s. You know, it kind of looks like that a little bit, this chick. I like it because of the duality between the two. I mean, one of the characters, Duo, is an obvious parallel and, you know, way heavy-handed and on the nose. Yeah, but yeah. I don't know. I like this segment, though. I really do.
It's I like the animation a lot. I like the whole samurai aspect of it.
Yes.
That's this one, right?
Yes.
Samurai thing? Yeah, that was fucking great. And I like it's Agreed. Just those two for most of the episode, too.
Yeah. I mean, visually, I think it's one of the more impressive ones. I actually just like this art style. For whatever reason, I don't know, I get some Kill Bill vibes from it. Not necessarily that they're the same story at all. Just, I don't know, something about, like, the female character. Yeah, like, maybe some of the anime segments in that movie. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I just thought of that when I was watching it this time. This was always one of the segments that I didn't like as much when I was younger because I felt like it was just a little bit too far removed from the Matrix lore, but I actually really liked it this time. I don't know. I guess just distance from it for a bit and like not necessarily having an expectation of it connecting directly to, you know, the movie. I don't know. It kind of did some good things for me. So I actually really like this segment. Mm-hmm.
There's one particular shot where there's like slow motion where the sword is shown as she kills Duo. I love that. Then we see him wakes up to find out that it was all part of the training program. It was like a dream ending, which I hate, but still, I think I like this segment a lot. I think it's different. I see a little parallelism too. I'm going back to that first movie a lot, but I see a little bit of parallelism between these two and Trinity and what was Joey Pants' character name?
Cypher.
I see a little bit of that between the antagonism because he likes her and she doesn't kind of thing. The whole ending is what kind of throws it off for me. We next move on to World Record, a segment. I got to tell you guys, I'm taking notes on these fucking things, and I'm doing a lot of pausing and taking notes as I'm watching it. But this World Record, I think I must have watched it 3 or 4 times just to get what the fuck was going on. There's a lot going on in this fucking segment.
So I'm completely going to show my hand here. If I were to rate just like each Animatrix film on its own, this by far is my favorite. It's not even close.
Really?
Yeah, like it's not even close. Dude, the moment when he's like trying to stand up and the agent's just like, sit down.
Ugh. Yeah, it's pretty badass.
It's fucking, because you get the same kind of idea that they deal with in Kid Story a little bit, right? Like the self-substantiation stuff. Like he's pushing himself so far over the edge that he's actually seeing the other side. And I love it, man. I mean, I know it's hyper-stylized and like the like squishy muscle explosion stuff is weird, but I just fucking love the idea of this. The whole like, this is the top of the heap for me.
I dug this one. The animation is a little weird in it. The story itself is, it's a weird concept to get across, you know, the idea of the Matrix and how it affects certain people and how you could kind of like break through it. I guess I wasn't feeling this one all that much. It's okay. Like I do like that part that Jack's talking about at the end where he's in the wheelchair and shit, because you know, even while you're still plugged in, you can still, I mean, he's not woke. He's not hashtag woke. You know what I'm saying?
Whoa.
But he could, he's still pushing the boundaries of what's physically capable. So I like that idea of it, but, and this is just okay for me. I don't love it.
I don't know. The animation's weird to me. Like, the agents look really bizarre in this. Mm-hmm. It took me a while to understand that they were even agents. Like, seeing a track star about to start a race, we hear a voiceover, and we get the feeling looking at the ominous figures nearby that whatever's going to happen was planned all along. You know, I do like the flashbacks of him doubting himself to his father, and I do like all that. I like the flashbacks during the race, and I'm normally not a fan of flashbacks, but here I think we need it because it's a short. We need to get this guy's story. We get even more flashbacks of our main character being told that his muscles will give out if he runs the race. You guys like the way the muscles look as they're like totally giving out? Jack, you're really into this fucking
story. I love it. This is like conceptually, this is by far my favorite idea in the whole thing. Because I just look at this whole animatrix as like, they're just throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall, you know? And they attack it from a bunch of different perspectives. And I fucking love how epic this one gets. Like, this is the one when I think of the animatrix, this is the segment that I think of. Like, first and foremost, I love this segment.
Yeah, I'm with you, Garrett. When I mentioned how the animation really didn't sit with me all that well, it was that moment specifically.
He does set the world record, or he does set a new record, but then, like, we cut to him coming out of the hospital, like Jack was saying, and learn that he will never run or walk again, and indeed, everything was pre-planned. It's a real big stumbling block in a set of stories I was actually really digging, digging more than I remember digging. With the years that have gone by, I've learned to enjoy way more, and this, I was really enjoying all these stories until I got to this one, and it was my first stumbling block. But our next story is Beyond, which I'm going to go ahead and show my hand. This may be my favorite one.
I like this one a lot.
Oh, I love this one. Good. It's about a cat and its owner, and who is a teenage girl. And when the girl realizes that her cat is missing, she goes on a mission to find it, which leads to what's believed to be a haunted house, but turns out to be like a part of the Matrix. I like this segment a lot, boys. I don't know about you guys. How are you guys feeling about this?
Yeah, this is a cool one. This is it's got that weird factor to it. Immediately gets you thinking about, well, I guess that's more of a retrospective idea because we technically haven't watched the Reloaded yet by the time we've seen this for the first time. But, you know, it kind of calls into question all that stuff about the Oracle, you know, when she speaks about ghosts and goblins and werewolves and stuff and them being glitches or, you know, errant code in the Matrix or any of that. I really like the way that they play with that idea in this.
Yeah. Jack, when you're saying that world record, like you love that concept out of all of these, I think when you think about the Matrix and having one small section of the Matrix just be full of anomalies and glitches and everything and translating that from a kid's perspective to being a haunted house, I just love that fucking idea.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Me too.
And just the way it ends too. I mean, it just, they turn into a fucking parking lot.
Right.
And
yeah,
you know, they're all just kind of wondering, hey, you know, can we still fucking jump from this building and land inches from the ground? No? Okay, let's go do something else on.
Right.
Yeah, they're kids. Yeah. They're gonna go find something else to do. Like I was saying, like while the last story's weirdness never really gelled with me, all this stuff about these kids jumping off the building and stuff and all these little tests that they're doing, all this tone and execution is really working for me. You know, like the dogs changing and doorways giving way to high winds and knocking her down. Like all this stuff, man. Like the weirder, the better with this one.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. Maybe it's the animation because I wasn't a big fan of the animation of the last segment. And I was probably starting to just kind of zone out of it because, you know, the animation was just like Jack was saying, just too stylized here. I'm liking this girl. I'm liking this cat. And I'm liking the story. So the girl gets taken away by what I can only assume are agents. Are these agents that are taking her away?
I always assumed that they were, but maybe they're not. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if they were like actual agents, but some kind of authority figure.
She goes back to the house, bleeds on the ground, and I'm assuming that this blood makes it go back online. Is that what you guys thought?
Yeah.
Like her blood is what opens it up again?
I didn't even really think about this.
Yeah, I didn't either. Do we know that it opens back up again or no?
I'm assuming so because we kind of see things shake, and I thought it might have opened up.
That's interesting.
But that's just kind of my conclusion. But yeah, this segment is probably my favorite. Next one, it's called The Detective Story. Mm-hmm. And this one, as you can imagine, feels very noirish.
Yeah.
Film noir. A detective gets a case to end all cases when he gets a call to find a computer hacker by the name of Trinity. When I first saw this, boys, I thought maybe this was a Trinity backstory. This is how Trinity joined the Matrix.
Yeah.
you know, this is how mm-hmm. she joined Zion. But it's not that. It's not that at all. You know, she's just in the midst of a detective story. How you guys feeling about this one?
I like it. I like, you know, the noir aspect of it, the detective aspect of it. I mean, it reminds me of Sin City in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought of that too.
Yeah. I don't know. This was almost like, out of all of the vignettes that we got in the Animatrix, like, I wanted this one to go on much longer. It just felt like there was so much more story to tell than, you know, this guy just fucking dying and just being like, oh, agents, go fuck yourself, which is kind of a cool ending.
Yeah.
I do like the ending.
Yeah, so this segment is kind of similar to a certain video game that I really love, and the video game kind of does the story better, but it's pretty cool. You know, you get, obviously, the film noir vibes. It's very Double Indemnity. I mean, down to the ending is pretty much the exact same ending, just in a different setting. You know, and it works. It works very well. It's not necessarily one of my favorites just because this plays into the cliche so heavily that I've just seen it before. It's interesting applying that here, but it's just not really, I don't know, doesn't quite do it for me.
After doubting the credentials of the person on the other end, he checks his bank account to see that $800,000 was indeed deposited into it, and we are off. He delves deep into the case, and unlike Jack, I'm liking how the story's developing, even if it's coming off as kind of boring. Even for a short, this kind of dragged for me. I don't know. Jack's wanting it to be longer, but I don't know. It just didn't seem like it got to the point sooner than I was expecting. You guys weren't finding this dragging a little bit?
No. Yeah. I wanted it to be a little bit longer. Because I think that's why. Wow. Because it might have dragged too long. You got Trinity in the episode, and it's just like, by the end of it, she's like, all right, later. It's almost like his involvement in this story was like of no consequence. Because nothing really happens in it.
Yeah, like Carrie Ann Moss, this is her voice. Mm-hmm. She voiced her character and everything. Yeah, and absolutely. I remember playing like X-Files games when I was a kid. I wasn't a kid. I was like fucking 20 years old. But I remember playing X-Files games with Mulder and Scully. They were actually in the game, and it was exciting, but they didn't really delve into the story that much. Like, they weren't really a part of the story. You were a detective on that end. Same thing here. She doesn't play into the conclusion of the story. She doesn't play into how it resolves. Like, she's just there. And I like I said, I like that she's a background character. I like that she's not a main proponent of the story. I like that it's about this guy. I just wish the guy was a little more interesting. He finds Trinity through an Alice in Wonderland chat room and boards a train to look for her. He finds her on the train, and she reveals that it was a test that she was there to, and that she was there to save him. And we see a rehash of, again, I'm kind of sick of seeing these rehashes from that first Matrix, but she's pulling a bug from him, although this time it was his eye instead of the belly button, and agents find them. I'm having a little bit of a hard time comprehending exactly what I'm seeing here, but I'm liking it once we get to the conclusion, but just getting here was just a little long for me. I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, again, like, love the black and white animation. It totally works for
me. Yeah, absolutely. Even if it did just kind of feel like an excuse just to get Moss in the Animatrix. Yeah. But. So the next and final story is Matriculated. And, boy, another one I had to rewind 800 times to find out exactly what the fuck was going on. Here we see what looks like a machine-driven world and a, once again, female lead sent to destroy them. On one end, I do like the weirdness of this one. And by the way, this is the one that Peter Chung did.
Oh, okay.
Peter Chung, he of Eon Flux. I love the weirdness. I love the suspense. It's developing tons of close-ups of their crawling legs and taking out to thunderous applause. All this stuff I enjoy, but God, it doesn't go to anywhere.
Yeah.
This is my least favorite story of the entire
Yeah, I think this one set. Was a little too convoluted for its own good.
It's very Dan Deacon. I don't know if you guys know Dan Deacon shit, but...
Yes.
It's like super trippy, and I don't know. It's very... It's got this like hippie commune edge to it that I don't really think should be here. I don't really quite understand what the plan is for these people. So like... They're going to get this robot, this machine, to feel emotions for people and then defend them? Like, what? I don't...
Yeah, it's really... more just like they just feel like that the robots, if given the choice, would choose to help the humans out. I think that's pretty... where they were going with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
That's a leap.
It's an, again, it's an interesting idea, but it's like that's a movie. I mean, that's a movie right there. You know, that's not a short.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's look. I think visually, it's fucking bananas. You know, there's this weird. It's very good at times. Then there's this weird mix of like CG in drawn stuff that is just fucking weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's okay. I don't. Kind of
all this imagery though, like of her like turning gold and then falling off a robot and turning into a marble and heading down a drain, all this stuff, are we seeing a machine get reprogrammed or just matriculate, as the title says, in front of our eyes? I know they're playing with the you know, the Matrix title, matriculated, huh? Good one, Peter. And then all of a sudden they're getting attacked by Sentinels. Ugh. And we even see, Jack, did you notice the Wilhelm scream in this fucking thing?
Yeah, I did, actually. I was
really?
Gonna mention that.
I missed that.
Yes!
There's like a lot of weird details in this one that I don't know. It's a little too ambitious, I think.
That's a great way of putting it. I enjoy ambition, but this one just takes it way too far.
Like,
and
rewatching it, you know, I was immediately reminded of like Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I feel like Ex Machina is the movie that, if it goes a different direction, is this story. But it's just not enough time. You know, it's not enough time. It's not clean enough. You know, I think you need a better filmmaker to get those ideas across in this, you know, short of time and efficiently and in an entertaining way. I don't know if they really execute it that well. Plus, like I said, that like hand-drawn CGI mix stuff is so fucking noticeable and shitty.
Mm-hmm. So boys, that does it for the entire Animatrix, I guess we call it saga entry. Mm-hmm. in the Matrix trilogy. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you guys give this as a whole? One score for all 8 segments. I'm gonna go to Jack first.
I think overall this is a very interesting 7 out of 10. I found that there were segments that I liked more than I used to, and then there were other segments that I like even less than I used to. You know, overall, I'm glad that it's made the way that it is. I think in a format like this, you're not going to knock it out of the park 100% of the time just by sheer nature of what you're doing. I mean, it's the same thing as all these like horror, you know, compilation movies like VHS and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's a nice 7 out of 10. I'm willing to go there.
Alex?
Yeah, I'm going to do the same. I'm going to do a 7 out of 10. I think having supplemental material for a movie that sets up this whole universe is really cool before that second movie comes out. You mm-hmm. know, just kind of like what's the appetite and just keeps you hungry for, you know, what's coming down the pike. I liked this a lot more when it was first released, and, you know, just watched it over and over. I liked it less this time around. I guess just because of how inconsistent the universe is by the end of Revolutions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It kind of bums me out, but I still like it, though. Like, the vignettes are all pretty good for the most part, and the animation is tops. Yeah, I think it's still enjoyable. I mean, I think if you like the universe and you're willing to forgive its flaws, then you'll really dig this.
3 for 3 on 7 out of 10. I'm also giving it a 7. If you look at it, world record and matriculated to me are, I don't want to say worthless, but you can go without seeing them. I think if you want to really dive into this universe, a kid's story, a second renaissance, and maybe Flight of the Osiris, mm-hmm. if you want to, you know, get the continuity of how Niobe gets that letter in that second film, all of those are kind of, you know, those are must-sees if you want to really get into the universe. But the rest of them could be drops. But here's the thing. The ones that I really don't like Matriculated. The other ones, so-so. I don't strongly feel one way or the other about the rest of them, but the ones I do feel strongly about are those three.
Yeah.
It was an interesting way of just expanding the universe. Like, when I was thinking about whether to include this or not, I didn't think we had a choice but to, because it does expand the universe. You think back to those Alien Predator movies, like, they didn't expand anything. Like, they mm-hmm. just, if anything, they narrowed them down. They dumbed it down. Like, these expand the universe. And I think that's a good thing. And I think it was really ballsy of the Wachowskis to just take all these people who have different visions, give them outlines of stories, and say, here, do what you want. Obviously with some guidelines, but I think it was a really cool thing that they did to let other people expand the universe. And for the most part, I think it works. And after you watch that first Matrix film, pop this in right before the you watch Reloaded. And essential stories are those three that I mentioned. The other ones, watch if you want, but they're not essential, I don't think.
Yeah.
So that does it for the Animatrix, boys. We were wondering if we were going to make this, you know, if this podcast was going to be 20 minutes or if it was going to go long. We went about a normal podcast. Nice. I appreciate you guys as finally getting to watch these. And I think the ones that everybody's waiting for, I think, are the starting next
week.
I think the discussion on the sequels is what is the meat and potatoes of this entire series.
Yeah, and yeah. Matrix almost seems like a no-brainer, but the sequels, yes. Now we're fucking talking.
Yeah, and there'll probably be some arguing, there'll probably be some shouting, there'll probably be some definite things that people expect when they download a binge podcast. But
definitely.
Thanks, boys, for going deeper into the universe with me. Next week, Matrix Reloaded, and until next week, see you guys later. All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
So without spoiling a potential video game that I know one of my co-hosts will be playing soon, this is very similar to another story, and that is done kind of better in the game. I'm not going to tell you which one because it's sort of a surprise when you play it. But
hello?
Hello.
Did we lose Jack?
I think so.
The Jack's chick just... Fully hang up on
yeah,
him?
She's like, fuck it, you're done. Sorry about that. All right, I don't know where we were.
Oh. You were saying you were comparing it to a game.
All right, I'll just restart that.
Okay, go ahead. Thanks, guys. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Ain't no thing.
That came off really well.
GC, I still have that folder that I shared with you last week. So I'll just I'll put this file in that folder.
Actually, I should be okay. I didn't have any issues with recording, so I should be okay.
Oh,
I want to
just in case.
You know, I want just in case. Yeah, go ahead and send it just in case.
Oh, it's already sent, son. It's already sent.
Oh, okay. Well, fuck off, man.
Wow, you're welcome. What a
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on BingeMedia.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Buy some merch at BingeMedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at BingeMedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget...
I can't get enough of soup.
Bob O'Girl.